I'd like to bring to order the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency. And today, in honor of a legislator that needs to testify briefly, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3400. Bob, could you give us a brief description of House Bill 3400, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3400 requires the governor's biennial budget report to include each state agency's percentages of expenditures made inside and outside of the state under all contracts for goods or services entered into in the previous biennium.
Thank you. And so we have the sign-up sheet in favor. Representative Clem, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Brian Clem, state representative from here in Salem, District 21. Thank you for hearing this bill and putting up with my harassment of you the last several weeks until such a hearing got announced up through, I think, just a 458 probably yesterday. I was still eyeballing it closely. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Very briefly, last session the House unanimously passed a bill called House Bill 3000. We called it the Buy Oregon Act. It has to do with allowing agencies to purchase more goods from Oregon companies and products made here in Oregon. And it wasn't mandatory, it was discretionary. And this is essentially a reporting mechanism to see how that's going. And I've worked with the governor's office and DAS. They're here. We've agreed, between ourselves at least, that we all think it's probably more cost-effective to place it on the Oregon Transparency website than in the bill. It says the governor's recommended budget. But for your committee's time, we agreed we could do that in the Senate and just say now that's the intent, and then you don't have to go through any additional waiting on amendments and things because you don't have the time for that. So that's with that. I'd be happy to take any questions, and I appreciate even the opportunity.
Thank you. Committee members, questions for Representative Clem? So, Representative, I'm going to ask you one question. So, in this proposal, is this a requirement of all of the state agencies?
So, the proposal
it does say for each state agency.
So, they're required to. On the percentage of contracts for goods and services made outside the state and the amount inside the state.
And so, and forgive me if this may seem redundant, but so it's for goods and services. Would it also include the goods and services under public contracting for construction?
I thought about that right before I walked in here.
As they weren't part of House Bill 3000.
Yes, I verbally described it as a follow-up to House Bill 3000, but this doesn't reference House Bill 3000. It just talks about goods or services entered into this by a state agency during the prior biennium. So it doesn't tie to anything specifically, so I would think it would cover materials and or services regardless of what category they fall into.
So all public procurement, essentially. Okay.
Yes.
Any other questions? Representative Clem, thank you very much for allotting the time of your day to come down
thank
here.
Thank you, Mr.
And the opposed sign-up sheet? No, we don't have one. With that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3400.
Is he stealing the sheets again?
Good job.
He wasn't even listening. So, with that, let's open a public hearing on House Bill 3415. Bob, can you give us a brief description of House Bill 3415, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3415 requires a public body acting as radio common carrier by providing access to radio tower for delivery of radio communication service, radio paging, or cellular communication service to charge market rate for that access, and the measure defines market rate.
Thank you. And up we have Ken Johnson and Dave Honeycutt. Welcome, and thank you for coming back.
Thank you for having me back, sir.
So if you'd identify yourself for the record and give us your brief story.
Well, I'm Kenneth Johnson. I'm the owner and president of Oracomco in Eastern Oregon. We deal with 911 communications and communications infrastructure for cell structures and so forth. What has been going on is there's a push in the public entities to start bringing in commercial clients onto the public towers. And they're going in, therefore going in direct competition with the companies such as mine that spend a lot of money on infrastructure, which would be, I could see would be fair, except they have no overhead going in. They're not paying for the construction of the tower. They're doing that with federal and state grants. So therefore, they don't have to recover, say, $150,000 per tower. Plus, being a public entity, they're not required to pay the Forest Service fees. Also, they're not going to be paying the property taxes on that tower that I'm going to be paying. And so what we've seen in the rates they've been charging the customers they've taken on so far from my tower is they're charging below my costs just to run the tower, let alone buy one and build it. And so what we're asking is that if a public entity does choose to lease space on a tower, that at least the commercial company that's invested money in infrastructure and so forth can at least have a fair playing field to compete.
Pretty short and concise. Thank you. And Mr. Honeycutt, would you like to elaborate?
I would. Chair Holby, members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, speaking in support of House Bill 3415. Let me put a little meat on the bones of Mr. Johnson's testimony. Mr. Johnson owns and operates a company that installs communications towers throughout Eastern Oregon. They have towers in Union County, Umatilla County, Baker County, and Wallowa County. As part of that occupation, when he installs the towers, the company incurs a significant cost, approximately $150,000 to install the tower, along with lease rates. They lease land on Forest Service land, Federal Forest Service land, and they pay a lease rate to the Forest Service to operate to use the space for the tower, and property taxes. And the property taxes, as I understand from Mr. Johnson, are approximately $4,000 to $5,000 a year per tower. So there's a significant investment put forth from the company when the company goes in to install one of these towers, and they have to charge in order to make money. They charge other folks to lease tower space, and they have to charge a certain rate in order to recoup their costs and try and make a little bit of money so that they can employ folks. The problem arose as a result of some federal grant money that was made available to rural counties to give counties the ability to install their own communications towers. It's a public safety issue. The counties, Union County, for example, applied for a federal grant, got money to install their own tower, put it on Forest Service land next to Mr. Johnson's. They don't have to pay. They didn't have to pay the cost to install the tower. They don't have to pay property taxes, and they don't have to pay lease rates to the Federal Forest Service. So basically, they don't have any cost at all in putting up the tower. And so they're able to offer lease space on their tower for significantly less than Mr. Johnson is able to do. They're essentially putting him out of business. So what we're trying to do with this bill is to require a public body, if they're leasing tower space, to do so at a market rate, at a rate where the Ken Johnsons of the world can compete. And so that's essentially the short and sweet of this bill. There have been amendments that we've prepared. We've worked with ODOT and the Department of Forestry, who I think are both are in the back and could testify. But we've worked amendments with them. They're the dash one amendments that we just got them back this morning. We provided the committee administrator with a copy and the chair's office with a copy. And all what the amendments do is they exclude out leases to from one public body to another public body, and leases from one from a public tower if they're leasing to a private nonprofit emergency services organization. It's not our intent to interfere with 911 operations or anything like that. That's not what our intent is, but the bill as it's currently drafted could potentially do that. So we met with the agencies, and the agencies suggested these amendments, and we're happy to do it. So basically, if the amendments go into the bill, what the bill would provide is that if a public body has a tower and they want to lease to a private company, then they can do so, but they have to charge a market rate so that somebody like Mr. Johnson and his business can compete. We just want to level the playing field.
Essentially, such as right now, a case in point would be we'll allow a county, Oregon, between the county, the road department, the education department, and four of the commercial people in the valley have asked me to construct a tower for them to rent space on at a place called Mount Howard. What this would essentially do is give a microwave link from Lowell County through Mount Howard up to Mount Emily in Union County, where there's optic fiber and so forth, therefore bringing high-speed internet access into Lowell County. I would be willing to do this, but under the present laws and situations that we've got established by the rules that are as they sit today, I won't do that because I know Willow County has applied for a federal grant. And under the rules right now, then they could go and poach my customers because they have no cost.
Thank you. Question, Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You brought up a good point. It would not be appropriate for government funds to be used to poach your customers. As I read the bill, it doesn't seem to restrict private enterprise from poaching customers from government towers that are already constructed. In other words, you could have a government tower that's already in place, and a private enterprise could say, you know what, why don't we build one on the same hill? Because with this bill, we will then be able to force whatever rates are being paid up so that we can, you know, that we can compete with it. Is that an intentional?
Well, I would agree with you, Representative, in your premise. But no customer is going to, no private company is going to go there with the potential to poach a couple customers. You're talking 150 to some of the towers go up to $300,000 to develop. That's a lot of risk on potentially poaching a couple customers because you're going to be at the same rate as the county or the city. Now, there's not a potential to poach public entities from the public tower.
No, the amendment would take care of that.
Right. And so, therefore, I see your concern, but at the same time, the way I've seen it, you're not going to see me. I'm not going to build a tower next to, say, Umatilla Tribal Police's tower. In fact, we just had this situation happen a while back. I know it's not a state issue, this is a federal issue, but I had T-Mobile come negotiate with me for me to construct a tower on Dead Man Pass over in Umatilla County. At the same time, Umatilla Tribal Police Department got a federal grant, to build their own tower, which they actually hired us to build. So I built their tower and so forth. Then T-Mobile had negotiated a price. We were getting ready to sign contracts at a cost of $1,600 to $1,800 a month, starting plus going up as they added more equipment. Instead, they went to the Umatilla Tribal Tower for only about $800. and the tribal rules don't allow them to actually get paid. So what they did is they exchanged cellular service for space on their tower. There's no way I can compete with that. At the same time, I wouldn't go up. That tower still is not constructed because there's no way I can compete with the rates they're doing, even if they raised it to market rate. There's no reason that T-Mobile would spend the $25,000 it would take to move my tower.
Just for clarification, my understanding is from the bill that an exchange in services would not, that your example would not be covered by this bill because that would be an exchange of services, which was kind of exempted in this bill. But assuming that's the case, so we certainly see the problem that you're in.
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, when we had some interesting conversations, we learned a lot about, I did, and Mr. Johnson doesn't need an education, but I learned a little bit about towers as a result of this bill. And it's my understanding from ODOT, and again, they're in the back of the room if anyone would like to question them, but it's my understanding from ODOT that when they lease space on their towers to private companies, they establish a market rate and charge those companies a market rate. So ODOT is already in the business of doing that. It's just as a result of this bill, there's a few counties over on the east side that aren't doing that.
Was your tower in Union County? From your description, it was built and was there before the county installed theirs.
Yes, sir. It's actually a site with two towers that I own that are side by side. When I purchased Raycom, which I purchased the company about 8 years ago, I paid about $160,000 for the towers, and then I've spent a lot more upgrading them. In fact, this summer I'll be having to do another upgrade because of the new G rating prescribed by the federal government for the coding. Mm-hmm. And that'll cost me another $58,000 this summer just to bring the towers up to code.
And Union County is not competing, like for the 911 services, it's for private customers?
They've gone to after some of our private customers. And what I'm trying to do is also ensure that right now on my tower I have three cellular carriers. Mm. I have T-Mobile, I have Sprint Nextel, and U.S. Cellular. It makes sense for them to be on our towers because it's a lot cheaper than building the infrastructure themselves, and they can get a larger map faster. But the way it stands right now, Union County could go to either one of those customers when their contracts are up with me and say, instead of paying Raycom $2,000 a month, why don't you come pay us $500?
Mm-hmm. Got the issue. I really appreciate your efforts at, you know, getting this in front of us even at this late date. It sounds like it is an issue we need to pay attention to, and thanks for traveling all the way here. I know you have a vested interest, but for making the extra effort, it was
well. I certainly appreciate you guys hearing out the issue and taking it on.
Yeah, and I don't know if there's any other questions. I was going to see if Mr. Lauer might comment on how ODOT does their towers. So, Department of Transportation representative. Nice of you to show up on this issue.
Good afternoon. My name's Tom Lauer, Major Project Manager for ODOT, and specifically I'm in charge of the state radio project. As relates to the bill and how ODOT does its practice in charging, more than a year ago, we went about and did a market rate level surveys of what rates were, commercial rates, across the state. And we essentially split the state into three kind of zones, urban, suburban, and rural, because you find very different rates and property rates and so forth throughout the state as you go through those categories. And so we categorized from the market surveys what was the rates for those areas, and then we set up a rate table. Meanwhile, we also sat down and analyzed what had we been charging our other local government partners, local sheriff's departments, 911s, police, fire departments, police departments across the state as we cohabitate on towers. And we found we were charging about approximately 70% of what we were on market rates. And They were basically our cost recoveries. And as you heard in the previous testimony, our cost basis is different. Obviously, if we're on state forest lands, well, that's state land, and we're not paying lease on it. We also don't pay for leases on U.S. Forest Service land. Some of our towers are built with grants. Some of them built in partnerships with multiple other local governments. We all work in a cooperative. It lowers all of our costs, and we're able to offer each other that kind of discount. And so we charge approximately, about a 70% discount in each of the three categories. And that's pretty much what we've been charged and what we charge the local fire departments, police, and sheriffs. That's worked very well. It's an established rates that help us provide our services that are critical for all your public safety providers across the state. And in that end, we're officially neutral in this bill. State has not taken formal position, but we have worked with them to sort that out and be able to preserve it. Similarly, we went as far as to add the nonprofits, because in some locations you have multiple entities who will come together and form a nonprofit so they can provide emergency communication services. There are groups of counties across the state for their sheriff's department, so they have set up a nonprofit corporation to provide their radio service. And we don't want to get caught in the ambiguity that we're working with the agent for, say, a sheriff's department, rather directly with them. And so that was why that feature was added to the bill.
Thank you. I appreciate that background. It's actually very helpful. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Not seeing anybody else signed up to testify. Does anybody else want to testify on this bill? Not seeing any. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3415. I'm not going to open a work session to adopt the amendment right now. I think I'm going to have some conversations, but I do have an interest in seeing this discussion continue. So we're going to figure out how we're going to accomplish that. So with that, committee, I am going to move back to the top of the agenda. And we're going to open up a work session on House Bill 2207. Are you ready? Sounds good. We'll stand at ease for just a moment. I'd like to bring us back in order. As we left, we were in work session on House Bill 2207. I'm going to close that work session on House Bill 2207. We are evidently still waiting for paperwork on that bill. And open up a work session on House Bill 2978. Bob, remind us of House Bill 2978 and what status we're in with that bill, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2978 authorizes the Department of Consumer and Business Services or Municipal Building Inspector to assess investigative fee, increased plan review fees, and building permit fees if a person commences project work without a required plan review or building permit, provides a limit and exemptions, authorizes the department to bring suit to enforce compliance with the state building code, establishes a right of appeal for a person denied licensure, prohibits a specialty code contractor activities without recognition as a specialty code contractor. There is a dash one amendment which the committee adopted in our April 4th meeting, which replaces the measure, but the content of that amendment is substantially similar. We have at this time a statement of no revenue impact, and we have a fiscal statement issued with the dash one amendment. Mr. Chair.
So, and it does not have a subsequent referral?
That is just what I'm checking, Mr. Chair. No subsequent referral, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So, committee, any discussion on House Bill 2978-1? Maybe I'll have Mark Long go ahead and come up. I know we have at least one item to talk about regarding the fees.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Mark Long, Administrator of State Building Codes. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. The dash ones are a replacement of the bill. At our last hearing or work session that we had last week, there was a question regarding the fees related to Section 2 of the bill. I met with some of your committee members and have a proposed solution that I believe is acceptable. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have regarding that and provide the detail on the record as necessary. Good night.
Thank you. And Representative Richardson, would you care to comment about those fees as Representative Richardson has worked on those fees? And I have chosen not to adopt that amendment to the fees at this point, mostly because of the time it would take to get the fiscal back on this particular type of bill, which goes out to all local jurisdictions across the state. And I've committed to continue to work with Representative Richardson on the Senate side to make sure we deal with, I guess, the open-endedness of that fee structure, though my indication is, Mr. Long, that it's probably not likely that the fees would escalate, but the potential amendment we're talking about would essentially make sure that they wouldn't escalate too far.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. In conversations with Representative Richardson and others, if you look at Section 2, what we've proposed is two what I would call stopgap measures or protective measures to make sure that the fees didn't get out of control from a building inspector. I don't think that that would happen, but in abundance of caution, we would eliminate the ability to charge both a permit fee and a plan review fee, so eliminate the plan review fee, and then we would cap the investigative fee, and the proposal would be that the investigative fee would be the lesser of twice the amount of permit fee or the cost necessary to achieve compliance. And I just remind the committee that this is in a situation where an individual works without a required permit. There are some provisions in the rest of the bill that allow for certain work to occur, but when you work without a permit, there's an administrative action. Basically, the incentive is you get your permit first, and if you don't, you could pay twice the permit fee. The concern was that if that was a large permit fee, twice the amount would be very excessive, and so we put that cap that would be the lesser amount based on the actual cost, and I'm absolutely committed to making that change on the Senate if the committee is so willing to move the bill out.
Thank you. Representative Richardson, did we describe that accurately?
Chair Holby, that is correct, and I really appreciate the willingness of Mr. Long to address the concerns and help ensure that we don't have unintended consequences that could be a problem, and his assurance that this will be resolved on the Senate side is good enough for me.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Long, for addressing our concerns, and we will follow this along the pathway. But, committee, I'd like to go ahead and have the vote. Samantha? Oh, we need a motion.
Okay. Chair Holby, I move House Bill 2978 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you for paying attention. Representative Lively moves House Bill 2978 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? None, Samantha. Oh, Representative Thatcher.
Real quickly, I appreciate the movement, but I think sometimes you have to vote according to how things are mm-hmm. and not how they're going to be. And so I will be a no for now, and I hope to support it when it comes back from the Senate.
It's quite appropriate. Thank you. Other discussion? Samantha, can we have a vote, please?
Representative Vega Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. House Bill 2970, House Bill 2978 has passed and moves to the floor. And to volunteer to carry this one on the floor that would like to describe the scenario.
If you're really jumping forward.
Representative Lively, thank you.
I'm sure I can describe something.
We'll now close the work session on House Bill 2978. And with that, we'll open a work session on House Bill 2822. Bob, give us a description of House Bill 2822.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2822 requires newspaper publication of the notice of sale for real property. The committee has a proposed -4 amendment, and we have an individual here to speak to the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Could I have the individual or individuals that would like to speak to this amendment? See Daryl Fuller jumping up, Greg Peden jumping up, or maybe you don't want to speak to it. Beginning to think the bill was going to flounder.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Greg Peden on behalf of Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association. The -4s that are in front of you, we agree with. They are simply delineating out how to best deliver the public notice between the sheriffs and the newspapers to provide adequate and appropriate public notice. So we support the amendments and thanks to the chair and to Representative Richardson in particular for helping put those together.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Daryl Fuller on behalf of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. We, too, have reviewed the amendments and think they are just great, and we appreciate your work on them, and be happy to answer any questions you have.
Questions from the committee?
No. Is everybody aware of what the amendments do? I can describe them.
Yeah. Why don't you, Representative Richardson? This bill came before us quite a long time ago.
Thank you. As we recall, the current statute is that for a sheriff's execution sale, it is presently that there is an option. And basically, if the sheriffs have a website, then they can pay a couple $250 or so, and it can be noticed there. There was an attempt to actually have it be required to be full notice on both newspapers and on the website. This -4 says that the sheriff shall have a website instead of just may. They've already got it in operation, and that there will be a requirement for basic information to be placed in newspapers in general circulation, like we have presently. And it basically identifies, you know, who, what, where, and when, and gives but it doesn't do it with a full legal description, but it does it with an address if there is an address, and then it refers to the website address. And then on the website address, there's more detailed information, including all the meets and bounds, legal description, and those kinds of things, which previously had been a newspaper, but really didn't help move the process along. And so it's kind of a compromise, but it does honor the fact that some people still just read newspapers and are not really using the internet yet fully, and so it's a balance.
So,
Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know what the anticipated increase in costs to the sheriffs are, if any, for mandating that it goes on the website instead of permitting it? And then can you also speak to the decrease in costs from the newspaper side?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kenny Geyer, we don't anticipate any additional costs. Depends on, obviously, the volume, but we've been able to handle the existing volume, and assuming there isn't another spike of some kind, we wouldn't anticipate any additional, it would just be labor costs, and at this point, we don't think it'll be an issue.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kenny Geyer, there would be a slight decrease in the revenue that newspapers would generate from these notices. Representative Richardson indicated the language is not the full notice that would be published, but it's I couldn't give you a percentage of that. Every time there is notice in a newspaper, the language can be slightly different depending on some of the details, but it is. It is descriptive enough in this in the amendments that I think it works for my clients.
Just follow up, please. So I believe that the cost was about $250 for four postings. This is, again, this is a long time ago. Is just any guess at 100 now, or you know what it would be?
For Representative. I don't know that I would give you an accurate number, but off the top of my head, I would say I'm going to guess that it reduces the cost by about a quarter.
Other questions? Mr. Peden, am I correct that these are about judicial foreclosures?
Correct.
And currently, right now, they're not required to be published in the newspaper at all, I believe.
That is correct.
So this is going to require an additional cost, essentially.
Mr. Chair, the provision in current statute, as I recollect, is an either scenario on the sheriff's website or in a newspaper.
Okay. You just wanted to make sure that was clarified a little bit.
This
thank
requires.
You.
Right.
There
is one clarification.
I just quick, cause another clarification.
The original testimony was that for the newspapers, it's roughly 250 minimum. Well, I mean, it may be 10 times that. It depends on the amount of space and then the cost per inch and all of those things. And so by having, the alternative that we had, what we were faced with at first was to have the full amounts in there, which would have been, it could be a substantial amount. And this really does give additional notice for those that look in the newspaper that might otherwise just be on the internet, but the price is going to be not excessive.
Right, and thank you. I know that when Representative Richards and I were talking about this concept, I tasked him to figure out what truncated information should be in the newspaper, and I think we came up with a pretty good compromise on this, and I hope people recognize it as such. But certainly, I think there's potential for this issue to come back and be an ongoing discussion in the future. So with that, Representative Lively, is there any other discussion? Not seeing any Representative Lively, could we have a motion, please?
Sure. Chair Hovey, I move we adopt the -4 amendments to House Bill 2822 dated 4813.
Representative Lively moves the adoption of the -4 to House Bill 2822, dated 4-8-2013. Discussion on the amendment. Representative Kenny Geyer.
Clarification, the amendment is the one that makes this mandatory, or the amendment is the one that shortens the requirement, and the original bill was the mandatory?
I'm not sure I understand that. Clarify, please. I'm sure I understand the question.
Amendment is saying instead of having full disclosure in both places at full cost, that it will be an abbreviated disclosure in the newspaper and then full legal description, everything, disclosure on the website.
And the original bill was full disclosure on the newspaper.
On the newspaper, correct.
Did you see him?
Representative Smith.
And just for clarification for those who may be listening, currently it is not a requirement.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, sort of. It's one or the other.
One or the other, right.
It's required to be one or the other. Correct. So it's sort of required, sort of not.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure glad we got that clarified.
I feel much better.
So, is there any objection to adopting the amendment? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted, and we're going to close the work session on House Bill 2822 as we still need paperwork. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for helping us wade through that scenario. With that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2929. Bob, give us a brief description of House Bill 2929 and where we're at with that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2929, where the committee adopted a Dash 4 amendment at our April 4th meeting, removes the... Dash 4 amendments to the original bill remove the requirement that a trustee pay a penalty for failing to provide the notice of new sale date, delete the provision that the purchaser recording of deed perfects the purchaser interest at a specific time, changes the specific circumstances in which the trustee may rescind the sale, require specific notice of rescinded sale and refund purchaser within specific timelines, allows a title company trustee to meet the registered agent and registered office requirements through registration with the Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. At this time, we have statements of no revenue impact and no fiscal impact for the amended measure.
Thank you. Discussion? I guess we'll take a motion.
Okay.
Representative Lively.
Sure. Chair Hovey, I move House Bill 2929 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Lively moves House Bill 2929 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Now discussion. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've had discussion about this bill and how it may be going beyond what was originally intended. The bill was brought forward with the idea that you could have a foreclosure sale and then the trustee who's conducting this doesn't get you a deed for sometimes months, and so you're left hanging. And so the intent of the bill was to make this a 10-day period. There's some states where it's ordered the same day. I think Utah may be that. In some, it's the next day that you have to provide the deed to the buyer. And this would be, in Oregon, 10 days. But it went beyond that, in my opinion, and essentially said that to the seller, the trustee, would have an unfettered right to nullify the sale within 10 days for any reason that they came up with. And by doing that, now you've got this occasional situation when somebody comes up and they say they want to buy the place, they're willing to bid for it, and so the opening bid at these foreclosure sales is always the creditor who says, here's how much is owed on the debt, and here's our attorney's fees, that's our number. And so anyone else can say, well, I'm going to beat that by $1,000, and therefore it's going to be my property. Well, with what we're about to pass here, it says that the trustee has the ability to say any time within 10 days, well, guess what, we're not going to sell it to you after all. We looked at it, and we made a mistake on the opening bid, and we should have charged another 10 grand. So if you would really like to have this property, let me extort $10,000 more because I have the power to do it, and then you can have the property. And so I think that's an unintended consequence. I talked to the promoters of the bills. They said it was as well. And so we have Dash 5 amendments, which actually put sideboards on that and explain that instead of just having it be anything within 10 days, that it can only be nullified for a bona fide reason, and that would include, you know, setting advertising or otherwise specifying the open bid amount for the property that is subject of the trustee sale, an error relating to the providing of a correct legal description of the property that is subject to the sale, or complying with requirements and procedures that are imposed by law. Those sideboards would be helpful and would make this, I think, a bill that I could vote for without them and without any assurance that they're going to be installed in the Senate side, then I'll be a no vote on this. But I would think that those that are moving the bill, they feel that the sideboards would be appropriate, and I certainly would endorse that in the Senate side and then when it comes back over.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. And that does describe the scenario from my perspective as well. Although I would say that right now the reason for this bill is that Oregon law has no way to compel the trustees to turn over those deeds from trustees that are operating in other states. And that's why this bill was brought forward. And so the 10-day is better than, forever. Ability to not deliver the deeds and eventually rescind, which is why this bill was brought forward. And I can appreciate, and I hope I don't have to do this too many more times, but twice in one meeting, is to agree with you that we will seek that clarification on the Senate side.
Agreeing with me or the clarification?
We got to clarify on that.
Yeah. You take it any way you want. So we will seek a clarification on that that 10-day sideboard on what the rescinding can be about. I think those sideboards are appropriate. I do have a slight bit of concern that that there may be other pieces included that may be left out of that proposal, but. Not sure about it yet, since we just have got those amendments last night, I think, right?
We need to honor the Legislative Council attorneys for the midnight oil that they're burning to get these things to us.
Yeah. Great job. So, and I, again, it's just a matter of timing to get all the paperwork back. And I hate to see this bill flounder and not pass in waiting for paperwork. So I'm comfortable moving it forward and addressing your issues on the Senate side, and I can appreciate your no vote as well. Is there other discussion on this? Seeing none, do we have the motion before us? So to recant, Representative Lively has moved House Bill 2929 as amended to the floor with a two-pass recommendation. Samantha, can we have a vote, please?
Representative Vega Peterson. Aye. Representative Thatcher. No. Representative Smith. No at this time. Representative Kenny Geyer. Aye. Representative Johnson. No. Representative Doherty. Aye. Vice Chair Richardson. No. Vice Chair Lively. Aye. Chair Holby. Aye. House Bill 2929 having received the required votes is
moved to the floor. Passes. So I'm guessing that the carrier will be.
I'm going to do that again.
Guessing I'm going to carry that bill. So we'll close the work session on House Bill 2929. And we're going to move down the agenda. Let's open a work session on House Bill 3070. Bob, why don't you give us a brief description of House Bill 3070, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3070 requires a person advertising consumer goods for sale to clearly disclose shipping and handling charges for transactions, excludes goods purchased from a retail establishment and taken into purchaser's possession immediately, makes violation of these new provisions an unlawful trade practice. The committee has a -1 amendment, which specifies application of the disclosure requirement to consumer goods that will ship directly to the consumer. And the committee has received statements of no revenue impact and no fiscal impact for the measure with that -1 amendment.
Which we have not adopted yet.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lively, do you have a motion on the amendment?
Certainly. Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 3070, dated 3/27/13.
Representative Lively moves the -1 amendments to House Bill 3070, dated 3/27/2013. Discussion on the amendment.
have a question.
Got a question.
Clarification.
Representative Richardson.
I just wanted to clarify that this is on the amendment.
Okay.
And the amendment is going, does the amendment include the provision that the disclosure of shipping only needs to be mentioned before the consummation of the sale, but not in every advertisement?
And we'll let Representative Doherty clarify that.
Yes, that is the clarification, that that they didn't have to, for example, the example that was brought up was AT&T with cellular phones and so on, but they wouldn't have to, if, when you walk into the store, and if you're going to, you know, they did not have to put it in every advertisement that they had, because that's usually a point of sale retail where you walk in to do that. So that is what the clarification was. It was brought to us by AT&T.
And that also applies for other forms of sales.
Yes, yes.
Advertising. All right, thank you.
And most of it, as I say, is, you know, when you see things in the newspaper and that kind of thing, where you are almost physically going to walk into the store. Because if you do call, they dispose of it that way. So.
Thank you, Representative. I guess my timing was such, I thought Elise Brown was still in the room, but evidently she stepped out for another hearing. And so I was going to have her say something, but I think she's in another hearing room at the moment, and my mistake for the bad timing of bringing that up without her in the room. Other discussion on the House Bill 3070 and the Dash 1 amendment.
Thanks, Chair. I can support the amendment, but I guess I'm just not convinced of the compelling need for the legislation, so I'll be a no on the bill.
Thank you. And, there's Elise Brown now.
Hi, Elise.
Elise, would you like to come up and answer a question? I know you're not signed up for the bill, and you're going to get all the way up here, and there may not be a question. Representative Doherty gave us a clarification on the Dash 1 amendment and the point of sale requirement, and maybe I'll have Representative Richardson ask his question again to see how well she did.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Elise Brown, see what I get for getting found it out in the hallway and getting hauled back in here, so I apologize. I don't have the amendment in front of me, but Rep. Richardson, I'll do my best to try and answer your question.
Okay, it's a very short amendment. And thank you, Ms. Chair and Lisa. The question was, I just want to make sure that it was clear that what this amendment is going to do is ensure that you do not have to put in every ad what shipping might be, but that it must be disclosed before a sale is completed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, bingo. That was the issue that we brought to Representative Doherty, and our issue was, how do you know what the shipping and handling is going to be at the moment of advertising an item without understanding where that item is going to be shipped to? And so we did discuss that clarification at the time of the actual transaction is what was necessary, and I think that would have saved Rep. Doherty for her hassles with those knives that you got. So exactly, that was our point for the amendment. We believe that language gets us there.
Thank you.
And Elise, I believe that you signed up in favor of this proposal. Are you in favor or neutral or?
Mr. Chair, what I did was sign up neutral. We can support the bill with the Dash 1 amendments.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Any other questions? Not seeing any. And we're in the middle of a motion on the amendment. So Representative Lively has moved the adoption of the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 3070, dated 3/27/13. Is there any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment's adopted. And Bob, we reiterate we have the fiscal statement, revenue statement.
Statements of no fiscal impact and no revenue impact on the measure as amended, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lively, have a motion on the bill.
Certainly. Chair Hovey, I move House Bill 3070 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Lively moves House Bill 3070 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative Thatcher.
Thank you.
as I expressed to Representative Doherty when she was asking me where I was on this bill, I understand the intent, but sometimes when we legislate, we create unintended consequences, and I'm not sure if this is a major enough deal to invite potential consequences, such as the meaning of advertising simply means to communicate about a consumer good. It could be from a person, and that's what the bill says, a person, when they advertise a consumer good. That includes anybody, nickel ads, that includes anything on Craigslist, for instance, or social media such as that, a handbill. I mean, it just, nickel ads, that type of thing, where it could really, I potentially trip up a regular person. And so I'm concerned about that.
Yeah, that was not the intent, but...
Yeah.
But that they would have to disclose the shipping and the handling of that item when they sold it?
Right. I mean, they could be selling it to somebody down the street, bringing it to them. Maybe they'll say, our shipping, you know, we'll ship within 100 miles or whatever, it'll be free, or not. Or they could work out some sort of individual deal, but not necessarily know what the costs are yet. I don't know. I just feel like it
good enough.
Could trip people up, that's all.
Culture.
Yeah.
Any other discussion? Thank you. Samantha, we have a motion, and could we have a vote?
Representative Megan Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Kinney
Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
No.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Chair
Holby? Aye. House Bill 3070, having received the required votes, is passed to the floor. And we have a volunteer for a carrier on this bill. Oh, thank you. Representative Doherty will carry the bill.
You're welcome.
With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3070. And we will open a work session on House Bill 3144. Bob, give us a brief description of House Bill 3144 and our status on this bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3144 allows the Department of Consumer and Business Services to administer and enforce all or part of a municipal building inspection program, provides for joint management of building inspection programs, allows sharing of duties, resources, functions, and powers under intergovernmental agreements, specifies rules and procedures for agreements and shared building inspection programs, changes mandatory language to permissive language in instances where municipality or county ceases administration and enforcement of building inspection program, prohibits municipality from resuming administration of a building inspection program for a period of 2 years after abandonment of the program. There is a -1 amendment before the committee which replaces the measure, and I believe Mr. Long can speak to that amendment. We have, the measure has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. The measure has no revenue impact, and a fiscal statement has been issued, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and we have not adopted the amendment?
Not at this time.
Thank you. Mr. Long. So, Mr. Long, if you could briefly describe the bill and what the -1 amendment does to it,
sure.
Please.
Okay. Good afternoon again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark Long, Administrator of Building Codes. You may recall when we heard the bill the first time, we talked about the struggling counties and programs that we have out there in rural Oregon. Right now I have roughly 20 counties that have had over a 40% revenue decline over the last 5 years. In the building inspection program, the standards are set at the state level, so the code's the same statewide, but the service delivery occurs locally. The building permit revenue is dedicated to the building permit function. So in areas where you have declining construction, unfortunately, because of the economy, you have programs that are struggling to hang on. We bring the -1 to you because our goal with this bill is to work in partnership with counties before those programs become, I don't want to use the word insolvent, but basically not viable to operate. And so the idea is that before that program is returned to the state, or the state may have to take an action in an oversight role, if we could get agreement, which it talks about developing agreements in the first section here of the -1s, we could partner up, combine resources, work together to keep these programs viable. The idea is simply as if the counties are interested, I could come to the table, maybe provide management help, maybe a building if necessary, maybe cars, maybe purchasing, whatever it is that's necessary. Technology is often what is useful out in rural areas to make the process work better so customers can get their permits online. Whatever that agreement is that we would work out, we could then combine resources and kind of run that program together. The other scenario is programs can return. The current law basically is that I carry out the programs or the cities and counties do. They can. This law doesn't impact their ability to return those back to me and just kind of wash their hands if that's what they want. If they do that, and there are some counties that may be interested in that, then this bill gives us flexibility to go in and be able to hire the inspectors in an expedited way that are already there, set up shop, use some of the local forms and processes that are already there so that we can react very quickly. The concern is if a program comes back, if it's struggling, we need to be able to react quickly so that we don't delay construction and put the contractors in just a terrible position of not getting service, not able to build, or hopefully not going underground with their construction activities. So we've had lots of dialogue with the counties, because this is primarily where it would start, as well as the other parts of local government, and I do believe it has a referral to Ways and Means as well.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark, we're talking about the partnership opportunities between the state and local government. Is there any language in this bill that addresses if it's not a partnership, but rather the programs aren't running smoothly? Is there anything in this bill that allows you to go take those programs back from local government without their concurrence?
Mr. Chair, Representative, not in this bill in the Dash 1 amendments, but I do want the committee to know that under existing law, that provision is there. It's been around for some time.
It's already in statute.
Yeah, it's been there since 1995.
Okay, thank you.
Senate Bill 35, as a matter of fact.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Long, could you just walk us through the process that you would envision for a county that's come to the realization that due to whatever measures that they need some help? What are they going to do? They pick up the phone and say what to you?
Sure. Chair Hovey, Representative Johnson. I'm going to be out in eastern Oregon. It was going to be next week, the week after now, talking to two counties in a city that between them cover about 20% of the state. Have three separate building departments, and I believe they're subsidizing those programs with their general fund dollars because the building permit revenue is not
fee-based,
is not covering the cost. We're going to talk about, so they've called me. I'm working with commissioners. You may recall, I believe we had Commissioner Grasty here. He's one of the commissioners I've been working with in that original hearing. It's been quite a while ago now. They've called me up and said, hey, what can we do, Mark? I don't want to turn the program back. We want to have local control. We want to coordinate our other things, but we can't make these things work. Can you come out, and do you have any ideas? We're going to come out and try to hook folks up electronically and see if having electronic permit and transactions of the permit so the customers can get that online and the building inspectors can track it, if that can provide some efficiencies. We're going to talk about maybe I can be a backstop if they lose the staff. Many of these programs have one inspector. They go on vacation, they get ill suddenly. Unfortunately, many of our inspectors are close to retirement age in these areas. Folks lose their programs. Maybe a backstop so that we can help that. I'm really trying to prevent this kind of, the way it works now is either we do it or they do it, and we don't coordinate and connect well together. And I think this is the new way to help keep these programs viable, these partnerships and combining the resources. And you need to give me the tools for me to be able to do that under the statute, and that's what this does.
Follow up. Are you anticipating then that your current staffing is adequate to provide this kind of resource, or would you anticipate needing to expand the department to provide this sort of help?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the bill specifically states, and hopefully Andrea can find it for me because I don't remember the section off the top of my head, that we get to, if you think about it this way, you're sending policy direction that we can create these agreements and we can be flexible and creative with staffing and fees and how we do things within our limitation that's established by the legislature. So if I've got to go back because of the agreement that's required, that's an e-board issue or a Ways and Means issue, and that section is four.
Okay. One other follow-up then. I do see some language in here talking about that you could potentially hire back some personnel at the local level that maybe have been laid off because the fees haven't been such to maintain them. If they then come back to help in one of these projects, are they state employees or county employees?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, if I hire them, they'll be state employees. We could have an agreement potentially that they stay at the local level and we provide supervisory roles, but they would still be local inspectors, building official role, which is a supervisory role over the code as opposed to a personnel role that says, you know, who your employer is. But if we hire them, they'll be our employees under my regulations and collective bargaining agreement. What the bill does is allow us to pick those employees up in an expedited way. The thinking is if they're already certified, already qualified, already in the area, presumably can meet our background checks and our requirements to be a state employee, why not let me pick those folks up quite quickly as long as there's not an impact on my employees back at the state?
Thank you.
Other questions? Not seeing any questions at this point. Mr. Lively?
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3144, dated 3/21/2013.
Representative Lively moves we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3144, dated 3/21/2013. Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, is there any objection to adopting the amendment? Seeing none, amendment's adopted. Representative Lively.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3144 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
With a subsequent
referral. Oh, sorry. With a subsequent referral to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Lively moves House Bill 3144 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to Ways and Means by prior reference. Discussion? Seeing none. Shall we have a vote, please?
Representative Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Henningeyer?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye.
House Bill 3144 moves on to Ways and Means and passes. And with that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 3144. Stand at ease for just a moment. Bring the committee back into order. I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2927. Bob, give us a description of the bill and the amendment before us.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2927 establishes a task force on state government boards and commissions. It directs the task force to review functions and duties of existing boards, commissions, and other agencies to identify duplicative, inefficient, wasteful, or unnecessary functions or duties and recommend improvements. It specifies membership staffing and a requirement to report to the Legislative Assembly. and establishes the powers of the task force and declares an emergency and is effective on passage. There is a dash one amendment which replaces the measure. Dash one amendment directs the governor to submit a report to the 2014 regular session of the Legislative Assembly regarding boards and commissions, including certain information. It requires the governor to consult with certain members of the Legislative Assembly and the Secretary of State in developing that report. And that dash one amendment is available in OLS.
Thank you. And signed up to testify on the bill. Looks like me. So, committee, one of the proponents of the bill isn't here right now, but this is a bill that I know many of us have talked about over time, trying to take a look at our boards and commissions and what they all do, where they overlap, and whether they're serving their current function, and wanting to review that process. And it's been a difficult issue to get our hands around, and with the advent of task forces not really having a much favor in our ways and means process or on the Senate side especially, we decided we needed another approach besides a task force, and the governor has actually stepped up and said, you know, that they're going to look at this and provide us a report back, you know, to get us started down the path of looking at boards and commissions. And so I received that message from the governor's office with much glee, and decided that we should move forward with this. I think it's long overdue, something that countless governors have addressed on their way out the door, that we need to do this, we need to look at boards and commissions, but it is politically a very challenging undertaking or something. I screwed up that word. So with that, I will ask if there's any questions of me on the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Thatcher.
I think, yeah, this is something that we've been talking about on both sides of the aisle for a long, long, long time. So I really support this effort. But I'm also wondering if included in the investigation, if you will, by the governor, if they're going to be looking at what fits with the mission. Just because you're doing something or doing something really well doesn't necessarily mean it should be done. And so I just throw that out there as a, you know, piece of criteria, some criteria that should be considered when determining whether something has outlived its usefulness.
And I thank you for that, and I think that's that it may not be addressed exactly in those terms, but it does address the missions in this bill. It's under where did it go? Section 1, sub 3, excuse me, little b, that does talk about a review of the currently existing boards, commission, task forces, and work groups that identifies opportunities to conclude work, combine missions, and consolidate agencies. So it almost gets you there. And I think the governor's office is continuing to work on this language as we speak, and we really felt like we wanted to go ahead and move forward with something to get something moving. Like many of our bills, they're a work in progress, and there's two sides of this building to continue this work and these suggestions. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think more of an observation, and that is this is desperately needed. It's time. And my observation is this is going to be a huge undertaking to really try and get your arms around what is going on and the magnitude of these commissions and boards, and then trying to implement what Representative Thatcher was saying is do they continue to serve that valuable purpose? Just to try and get our arms around what commissions are out there is going to be a huge undertaking.
Yeah.
But I applaud you for bringing this forward.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if the pro task force and work group lobby has weighed in on this bill. And if they do, I hope you don't pick up the phone. I think would be a little disgruntled with some of the
perhaps, you know, and we fell short of having a task force on task forces. So
that was my bill.
So, you know, all kidding aside, I think this is something that the legislature does need to review. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because a lot of our government services and our government actions are conducted by boards and commissions. And without no disparaging remarks towards those boards and commissions, but, you know, it is important for, I think, the legislature to come back and review those boards and commissions, their missions and their duties and where we are effective and how we might be more efficient in delivering these services. And I'm really, as Representative Thatcher, her and I have talked about this for several sessions about what we can and can't do. And you know, so I do think that this is a good step forward, and I hope that the governor's office gets to work on this, and with our help, we'll end up with something that is worthwhile, and leads us in a better direction. Is there any other comments on this bill?
Maybe one, yes.
Oh, someone else may want to come up and speak to this bill. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to this bill? If you could come forward and identify yourself, please.
Thank you.
Thank you. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, my name is Kendall Clausen. I'm Director of Executive Appointments for Governor Kitzinger.
So I've been describing this bill the best I can, and we've had a good discussion of it. I would like maybe if you could give us the governor's office perspective on this bill and how they see themselves or how the governor sees his agency to undertake this proposal if it should pass.
Thank you, Chair Holvey and members of the committee. The governor's office believes that this is a really great opportunity. We recognize that the use of boards and commissions are a very unique and effective way of guiding policy. I think our interest in this bill would be to provide us with an opportunity to have some discussion and partnership in developing the best ways that we can be efficient, effective, manage risk, and really help to cultivate boards and commissions in an organized way.
Thank you. I probably stole all your questions already, but are there any questions, Ms. Clausen? Well, you ran all the way over here and delivered such a concise and expert testimony that you've left us with no questions.
Well, I will certainly tell my trainer that I'm short 2 minutes on cardio today.
Thank you for the effort, and we look forward to the dialogue. So we're in public hearing right at the moment, and I'm going to close if there's no other comments, I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session for the purpose of adopting the amendment. Open.
So, Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the -1 amendment to House Bill 2927, dated 4/3/2013.
Representative Lively moves we adopt the -1 amendment to House Bill 2927, dated 4/3/2013. Discussion on the amendment. Seeing none, is there any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, the -1 amendment's adopted, House Bill 2927. And with that, committee, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2927, as we will await paperwork on that bill as well. And there were two other bills on the agenda, committee, that we had on our agenda at the end, and like 2207, those bills do not have paperwork to move. So with that, we will carry over House Bill 3172, House Bill 3168, House Bill 3415, House Bill 2927, House Bill 3400, and House Bill 2207, and House Bill 2822.
I thought we did something.
Did them all? And for safekeeping, any measure that hasn't been voted out, in case I skip one. I don't think I did. Will be carried over to the next agenda. So with that, I will.
Chair Holby, one question. Did you want us to hold Wednesday evening this coming, or is it a week from Wednesday?
It will be a week from Wednesday.
Hold over from 5 to 7?
That's case. The tentative plan, yes. And that would be Wednesday the 17th.
Okay.
And we won't talk about that. And we'll keep you informed on that decision as it's come. We've made that request, and it looks like that may be. If you have challenges or conflicts, I think there's been one noted so far with that. Maybe two. So with that, committee, I appreciate your attention and coming prepared today, and thank you for all the work as well. So with that, I'm going to adjourn the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency.